said, okay, you know what? I'm not finna do a whole 15 minutes. I'm about to just go hit him with my Denzel, bitch. Nah, I know this finna work.
You go to Denzel.
So I went in my pocket and I pulled. I said, had my Denzel ready. I said, boom, you keep your hands off of me. Whatever the line was. Yeah. You can't eat two hamburgers, but I can eat one. And I said, man, nobody.
Can you hear me?
I said, I just did. That was Denzel.
That was Denzel.
Perfect. Welcome to the Sunday Scoop. I am your host, Richard Washington, joined by Callie Scott, and we are coming to you live from the world-famous Laugh Factory Hollywood Chocolate Sundays Comedy Show.
Yes, there's a whole entire live show happening right behind us, and we are here with the comedians that are actually on the show. They took a little time out. They're going to come and party with us for a little bit.
Awesome. Yeah. So today we have Trey Elliott and London Brown joining us, and we just got your bios real quick, so you know we're going to talk your shit for you, okay? So I got Trey.
Yeah, do my bio first, because London, London got some.
It's always a thing with the bios. Like, comedians, like, yeah, put me
just
first.
Do my bio first real quick. Just go over it real fast.
So I got Trey Elliott has been featured on HBO Max's Hacks and Laugh Mob's Laugh Tracks on True TV. Yeah. He's the host of Laughs on Fox and is touring right now with Tony Rock.
Yeah. Come on, somebody.
Rock the mic tour.
Trey has also appeared on comedic stages such as stand-up comedy show on Stars, BET's Coming to the Stage, The Last Comic Standing, Def Jam Comedy and Comedy Central, and he's even headlined a headline for the U.S. troops overseas with Armed Forces Entertainment.
Come on, man.
Trey Elliott.
But you forgot to say that I won the Price is Right.
The most important credit of them all.
The Price is Right winner.
Okay, and we have London Brown. London Brown is an actor and a comedian who started his comedy career in 2011 when he met Chris Tucker. He is currently playing the role of Marvin on Stars Power Book 3, Rays of Canaan. You can also catch him doing his things in films and series such as HBO's Ballers, alongside Dwayne The Rock Johnson and Tales from the Hood 3.
That boy doing it.
There's more. Stop playing. No, man, I appreciate it, guys. It's been amazing. Good.
Yeah. So thank you for joining us. And before we hop into the funny, we just wanted to take a quick moment just to show our love to Jack Knight and his family and friends. You will be missed, my brother. And
Rest in peace, man.
But you will be missed. So a couple housekeeping rules just for today.
Well, first of all, you're watching us live.
Yeah.
And we want to let you know that we can see you. So if you've got comments, if you got questions, if you see anything that you think is popping, like, go ahead and say that so that, you know, we can comment back. You know what I mean? Like, engage with us.
Exactly.
And if you're here, go ahead and subscribe. Turn your notifications on so you know when we're coming back. And we also have a new channel, right?
New channel. So across all socials is going to be at Sunday Scoop Pod. At Sunday Scoop Pod. And sponsors, where are you at?
Ooh, listen.
Where are you at, sponsors?
Yeah.
Listen, you see us over here with outfits that we just feel like wearing? We can wear your merch.
Where are you at?
Where are the sponsors at?
So, Alexander McQueen.
We don't want to drink water. We would love to drink your alcohol.
Thanks.
So there's an opportunity for you to be a sponsor right now. Hurry up and get it before we get sponsors before you. Like, you know what I'm saying? Yes. Like, get in.
You mentioned fashion.
I did.
Things that we're wearing, I feel like that's a perfect segue into fashion and comedy.
Yeah,
we got some stylish people sitting at the table with us.
Yeah, I ain't gonna hold you. I was prepared and ready to see your outfit as soon as I see you online. I was like, can't wait to see what he's wearing. Can't wait.
You know, I just feel like it. You know, it helps, especially like with doing stand up. The last thing we need to be so present. The last thing I want to be up there is concerned about what I look like. I gotta make sure that I'm together there so that I can be as present as I can be. But then also, you know what? I realized that our attitude is different when we feel we look, you know, appropriate. You know what I mean?
Yep.
That changes. When you think about a lot of people sometimes that are depressed, flip-flops, sweats all the time, keep a cut. But when you feel down and out, put on your Sunday's best. Because there is something that happens with our energy when we feel like we're ready for, you know, we're ready for everything.
It's the confidence that you have when you get a fresh cut.
Come on, somebody.
It's the same thing. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I gotta say, man, London is one of the flyest dressers that I, you know what I mean?
Yeah, appreciate you.
And yeah, I like to dress, you know what I mean? Yeah. But, you know, brother, I'm like, yo, London got some fly shit on. Yeah, because.
What's your favorite London outfit?
I think it's when he rocking the hat.
London. Absolutely. Okay.
And you know why I say that? It's because sometimes for myself, I'll put certain shit on and I'm like, I don't know.
You can't pull it.
I don't know if I could pull it.
Yeah.
Because if I put something on, I'm going to put it on and I'm going to show up. Like, everybody going to know it's my first day of having this type of shit on.
So I have not yet
got to the hat, but I want to. I'm like, yo, I think I can rock it.
Yeah.
But let me just, because I feel like everybody know me and be like, yo, boy, Trey couldn't wait to wear that hat. I don't want that reaction.
Let me tell you, he don't just put on the hat. He can put on the accessories with the hat.
No.
The hat is coming with a fly ass jacket.
But the hat is part of the accessory. So he going to have the hat, the accessories, this, that, man. So so London is, you know, I got to give him props with the fashion tip, man.
Appreciate you.
You know what I mean? Which is why I always try to make sure, you know, I'm cool on stage, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and I have my different, like I said, all right, today I'd be grown man, today I'd be more relaxed.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, so today I'm rocking something.
Nice quality.
Right.
It is very nice.
It's the high end Zara.
Facts.
It ain't the
I could tell there's a weight.
Yeah, it's
a weight
shirt.
To it. Absolutely. You know what I'm saying?
It's a weight on the
there's
shirt.
A weight.
To the Zara. Yeah. So this is when you go to Zara, you be like, wait, this ain't supposed to cost this much. This is this shirt, and then this the Alexander McQueen's to compliment.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, with the jeans. So
yeah.
I try to, you know, I mean, make sure I come correct, you know, when I'm gonna say, because like you said, when you look good, you feel good.
Did it take you time to acquire like that kind of knowledge? Because when I first started doing stand up, I ain't gonna lie to you, like I felt like as a woman, I wanted to cover up and I wanted to like, you know, make sure that people heard my material. And so like I was very into like, you know, a more conservative style of dress, but then like I wanted to like be funny, and that was so much more important to me. But now I'd be like, I'm trying to be flashy. All I want you to see everything. Like, have a great show. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, it's I've always just been aware of this. This is a small, quick story. My whole sense of style of dressing came from this moment here. I was in the seventh grade, and it was maybe a couple times throughout the year I would get something new, like first day of school, and then maybe Christmas, so and Easter.
First day of school, Christmas. So September, December, and April.
Right.
Three times.
You got three hits. Three, maybe.
Okay.
So my mom, she brought me this little plaid shirt, little dock or something, little casual something. But the whole thing was, I said, man, if I go to school Monday with this nice Easter fit on, I can't go back to my old stuff on Tuesday. Mm. So what I started to do was, at that point, I said, I got to keep this up. So I started wearing my uncle's clothes. Cause we were both the same height at that time. I was like 5'3", something like this. So from that point on, I just became very cognitive of what I look like and that kind of thing. But like you said on stage, we can't have enough confidence. Like, at least for me, when I go up there, I feel like it's my show.
Yeah.
Like, if I start first, I go at the end, I feel like it's the London Brown show. So I really just try to be present and feel like that. Because I'm telling you, when you go on stage, you don't feel comfortable with yourself, whatever that is.
Yeah.
It affects the material. And
facts.
I don't like feeling like that. So, you know.
You feel like the audience can smell it?
It's, you know what it is? All of it. It's a brand all the way around. Mm-hmm. Like, when I'm up there, I'm connecting with the guys on the masculinity. I'm connecting with the owner or the audience with the material and not running the clock. I'm connecting with, everybody has a part. I'm connecting with women. So I gotta look like that. So I'm hitting all the, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So for me, you know, I'd rather be, you know, it's like, if you want to be a star, you gotta
look like a star.
Star energy.
I was always taught, the late, great, my acting coach, Ivan Marcota, the late, great Ivan Marcota used to say, okay, you gotta look like a star. Okay, you got to get a costume, like Eddie Murphy, okay?
Yeah, do you feel like it's a costume?
And so for me, like Lennon said, you got to walk like a star, talk like a star, act like a star. You got to look like a star. Because when you look like that, that draws that star energy. And people would then come to you and be like, he ain't hurt for nothing, but I want to still work with this dude. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that was my mentality, man, because when it came to me with dressing, I had a moment in the third grade that changed my whole perception of dressing.
Uh-huh.
I don't know why, but I wanted a pair of biker shorts.
Okay.
Unplug this.
That's very interesting.
I guess I watched too many cameo videos.
Gotcha.
I said, yo, mom, give me a pair of biker shorts. I lied to you not. My mom bought me, and she should have stopped me. She bought me a pair of biker shorts with a yellow stripe, with the yellow stripes on the side. I was real skinny in the third grade. I put those biker shorts on and went to school. Now, no, I was skinny. You know, biker shorts are supposed to be tight. They was loose. My biker shorts look like hammer pants shorts on me. I went to school and I got clowned.
Roasted.
All day. All day. And damn. I went home and threw them biker shorts in the trash. I said, this will never, ever,
you gotta
ever
be responsible for your fashion.
Again.
You can't put it in other people's hands. That's
man.
I definitely, that's why, like, when I do, usually when I do a photo shoot or I do different projects, I'm just like, just let me know what you want to do or what the theme is. I style all my stuff, carpets and everything, because sometimes nobody knows me better than me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I like, this is also part of my brand, which is I want my fashion to definitely work its way into my career. And so when I do these red carpets and different things, I purposely make sure that it's me. Because again, I gotta be comfortable with whatever that is. As long as you like what you got on, he can be in a suit, and you can be, you know, in a jogger fit. If I'm in a hat, I don't ever feel overdressed or underdressed because I'm comfortable with that. So that's why when I walk into a space, I won't be looking at nobody. Yeah. Not like that. I mean, you know, I will give my shout out to my bros. Like, yo, that's what's up and that's what's up. But I'm always comfortable with me.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why I talk about it. I mean, you know, that stuff is, we got to be at peace with ourselves, you know what I mean?
I love that for you. I'm definitely calling all my homegirls and my mama on FaceTime to check my outfit before I leave the house.
Oh, people call me.
They FaceTime you?
Low key, the comics won't tell you, but, you know, there are a few comics that I have, you know, I help along with. I say, yo, it's cool. Just hit me. I don't want you out here looking like this.
Yeah.
Right.
Just hit me if you, man, I got some money, but I don't know how to.
I don't know how to put the pieces together.
Who are you styling for these days?
I don't want to put
nobody. Who are you styling for?
I have given a couple of some, and these, because these are my guys, these are my bros.
Okay.
I just say, yo, man, if you got some questions, just hit me. Yeah. Not that I know everything, but the little bit I know, I'm willing to share it, man, because I just understand. Because sometimes people just don't.
They don't know what to do.
They don't
or
know
how
what to do.
Where to go. You know, for me, you know, I'm lucky. You know, my girl is a former model.
Ah,
so, oh, so she know the styles.
So she know the styles.
Ah, okay,
you know what I mean?
Go get you.
There she go right there. You know, so.
Oh, all the time, she was looking at me. Imagine if I was that dude, I'm like, hey.
Oh, you see him on the podcast. Right?
You know?
Yeah.
If I was that dude,
that'd be me. But I've always, like I said, man, you know, growing up from the East Coast, you know, fashion was a big thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I love the fact that, you know, L.A. don't got a winner. So it was kind of hard for my fashion because I love the scarves, the peacoat,
right,
and that.
I love
so I was a dude out here in L.A. in October. Like, I don't give a damn what the temperature is out here.
I'm out here.
In Jersey, it's cold. I'm wearing this out here. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I just had to just take it off.
I lived in New York for a little bit. The first week that I got there was summertime, and I brought my Cali energy to New York. So I pulled up to the club wearing like a peacoat, and he was like looking at me. He was like, I don't even need to see your ID. You from Cali, huh? I was like, yeah, you're right. I learned immediately. I was like, okay, peacoats are just for the winter. It's utility in New York. You know what I'm saying?
I had to learn that because I'm living on the East Coast right now, and it's like I didn't realize that the East Coast has, you got two closets.
Winter stuff
and summer stuff.
Yeah.
So I had to learn that because, you know, now that's why I'm in a sweater now. I got all my East Coast stuff here. My stuff is in storage, so I'm still adjusting it and so forth. But it's a lot to learn.
Absolutely.
I'm so from LA. I have no clue what's happening.
Through and through. Bombing.
Oh.
Let's just get into it.
It's
a comedy podcast, so let's just get into it. I feel like you got one. Got many.
All right, so I feel like if you ain't never, I mean, bombing is part of the game.
Yes.
But my worst bomb, once I became quote unquote professional, happened at this spot in Reseda. When I moved here, I was 7 years in the game, so I was
from New York. From New York,
from Jersey. Well, I'm from Jersey, but I was living in D.C. in the DMV, Maryland, D.C. before I moved out here. So I'm really a DMV comedian. That's what people don't know. I started comedy in Atlanta because I went to Clark, but I only did like two shows in Atlanta, open mics. Then I moved to Maryland. That's when I honed my skills as a comedian. Was in Maryland and D.C. So I'm technically a DMV comedian, but I'm from Jersey. So
is there like beef between I'm a New York comedian and a DMV comedian?
Nah, it's okay. All love. Okay. So when I came out here, I'm already funny. I'm already killing stages and shit like that. This is whatever. It was this particular night in on Tuesday nights in Reseda at a spot called Weber's. My guy Evan Lynell was hosting. It was live music, and then in intermission from the live band, they would have a comedian. I would do it all the time. I would do this room all the time. Kill. It was a Tuesday. I went up there, killed it. Right, the next week I went back. So I was hosting the Comedy Store. I did my set at the Comedy Store. It was a chick named B Flat from Philly that had did the Comedy Store. She killed at the Comedy Store. So we all went to this venue in Reseda to do the spot. Like, yo, I got another spot for you if you want to get some more time. Okay, I'm coming. She came, and B Flat is funny.
Yeah,
but the audience wasn't giving her what I thought they should have gave her.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there like, oh, the audience act a little funny, but it's okay. I'll get them. But let me tell you. So the week,
famous last words.
You know what?
I'll get them. I'll show you.
And I say that because the week before that, like I said, it was a live band. So what would happen when the live band had got off stage, I was doing my set and I did an improv about the drummer. Like, you see the drum up there, like, acting like he having conversations with people while he playing the drum. So I got on the drum and was improv. Killed it with that.
Mm-hmm.
Next week, B-flat go up there, she ain't hitting. I said, oh, I'm going to get him. I got my girl with me at this time and her friend, and they got people from out of town. They hyping me up. Oh, Trey, don't go to the bathroom with Trey. Go. Trey about to kill him. Trey about to get him. I get up there. Audience ain't messing with me at all. Mm. I'm like, damn. I said, shoot. So I'm hitting them. I'm like, they ain't messing with me. I said, you know what? I'm about to go do that same improv on the drum that I did last week.
This will get them.
Let me go in that recycle bin real quick. Get these jokes out. Okay.
As a vet, I know always stay in the pocket. Don't start scrambling. I go get on that drum, start doing the improv. It's dead quiet.
Mm.
But what you don't get is that I had to walk to the drum. So the worst part was getting up from that drum set
to walk back
to the microphone in dead silence.
Oh, you physically got on
I physically got on the drum. I'm tripping over microphone cords. Ding, ping, ding, ding, ding.
It's dead silence.
And that walk was like a mile. It felt like it took me 15 minutes to get to the mic. The mic was right there. It's dead silence. And I get on the mic and I was like, say, yo, that worked last week. And they was like, well, it ain't work tonight.
Oh, man. Did it get hot?
It got like nine. It's something about bombing to get real hot. Yeah. You'd be like, who turned the heat up?
It gets hot.
I said, who turned the heat up?
Oh, my God.
And the host knows me very well.
Yeah.
So it's the thing with comedians. When we know how good each other, but, you know, he got to deal with, like, comedy ain't for everybody.
Oh, man.
Oh. That's cold.
Yeah, man. So I would say that's probably my funniest, like, worst bomb.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That always stands out to
me. Have you drummed since?
Never got on the drum since.
Okay. That's about right.
Never.
That's great. That's a great story.
I think one of my times was I was at the J spot here in LA in Inglewood. And the J spot, sometimes people feel like if the audience is black and you're black comedian, it's just supposed to just work. But the J spot was like this older, like 40, 45 and up, mature, bill paying homeowner, black people, church going and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever it was, I think it just had been a long night. And, you know, the host, one of these hosts was just like doing long sets in between. So anyway, I went up there. And I did the first joke, and it didn't hit nothing. I said, okay.
When that first joke don't hit, you be like.
but I have more. There's more.
Yeah.
So I went into the next joke, 15 minutes. I'm about to just go hit him with my Denzel, bitch. I know this finna work.
You go to Denzel.
So I went in my pocket, and I said, had my Denzel ready, said, boom. Keep your hands off of me. Whatever the line was. Yeah. You can't eat two hamburgers, but I can eat one. And I said, man, nobody.
Can you hear me?
I said, I just did. That was Denzel. I did. Nobody. And like you said, that walk, those walks, boy. Because the thing about it, too, after, you also, it's like, you got to stick around. If you really want to, you really got to.
Cause is there that voice in your head that's like, I can't leave now?
Yo,
I gotta. I mean, like,
after the fact, after. Like you gotta have the same. You gotta stick around. You gotta sit in that sometimes. Because what you want to do, of course, right now, we have some. You know, I won't say he had a really dope set. Mm-hmm. Humbly, I'll say we had really good sets.
Yeah,
it would be nice to be down there. And fellowshipping,
right?
You had a great set. Yeah. People just be high fiving and everything. But when you don't do well, you want to. Oh, I remember I just wanted to leave, and everybody come and they come, they walk past me. Oh man, you was brother. You next time, man, you gonna get them. I said,
yikes.
But it's hot. It'd be hot when they come jokes
and
go.
And it's times where, like, when you bomb it. Sometimes you'd be too embarrassed to leave, but too embarrassed to stay. So you just stuck in the middle. Because you don't want to leave and be like, yo, they got the best of me. Mm-hmm. And you like, damn, I'm staying, but they got the best of me. So you just kind of in the middle. Well, like,
you can't leave because everything happens after the show. Like, as a comic, you can't leave. Even if you're embarrassed or sad, your heart be broken, face be on the floor. But you get the experience. And like, you might get a nugget from somebody that you're supposed to get.
No, facts, man. Because when I first started comedy, when I first started comedy, it was always like one white woman that would always tell me, you're funny to me. It was always one white woman that would just say how funny I was. I'd be like, thank you.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys know, but Rich is a comedian.
I'm like two weeks in.
So okay. You got a lot of bombs in you. You got a lot of bombs in you.
I had my first bomb 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, man.
We've talked about it now every episode on the podcast for the past 2-3 weeks.
But you know, the longer you're in the game, the definition of a bomb is different.
Yeah.
Because now for me, the audience could be laughing, and in my head, I'm like, I'm bombing.
That's what happened to
because
me.
Because I'm not really getting... Like, I'm not getting the level of laughs that I think this joke should get.
Mm.
You know, so for me, so for example, like people don't know, like, if you ever watched the Michael Jackson and Oprah interview, and when Michael Jackson talked about the Motown 25 special when he first did Billie Jean on TV and did the moonwalk, he said he hated that performance.
Mm-hmm.
He said, oh my God, that was the worst. He was didn't like the performance. He said he was walking to his car, and some white kid was like, oh my God, that was the greatest thing I ever seen. And Michael was like, because he hated it. And sometimes my sets feel like that, where I'd be like, yeah.
I don't know.
Oh. Yeah. And then somebody just come to me and be like, yo. And I, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So bombing, the definition of long year in changes.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And I also feel, in what you're saying, it changes because, like, you go up there with a different purpose after doing it for a while. So sometimes, for me, it's not even about sometimes always getting the laughs as much as it is about me wanting to try something new. Mm-hmm. So even if trying something new means I didn't get the laughs, because at this point, you got a bunch of stuff you can go to after doing it for a while. You got tons of jokes that you can lean on
immediately. Yeah,
but it's
yeah.
like, do you want to grow? Do you want to sit in the quiet and grow, or you want to stay stagnant?
You
gotta
take a risk.
So sometimes you know, bombing. That's why when people be talking about Chappelle and them cats bombing, I'm like, these dudes are craftsmen.
Yeah.
Like, it's not always about, like I said, it's not always about the laugh as much as it is about building the material.
And they're workshopping. Absolutely.
Sometimes, like, you feel like you bombed because you didn't get to, like, say. Sometimes, like, I'm an autopilot and I'll say a joke that, like, I've, like, punched up and, like, kind of changed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then, like, I said it the way I didn't want to say it. I wanted to say, like, yeah, the joke worked, but, like, I wanted to do something a little pizzazz.
Right.
Shot, I don't need
like tonight, yo, I wanted to do something. I wanted to do something totally different than what I did tonight.
Mm-hmm.
But the energy of, you know, I got my mom here visiting, her husband, my son, his girlfriend. And I wanted to do this whole bit about my girl and putting this dresser drawer together.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, and it's brand new. I was like, we're going to do it tonight. But the energy just took me to a whole different improv set that I was like, oh, this is real material now. Because I was like, yo, my mom and her husband here. And I was like, you know that ain't my dad if I got to say my mom and her husband. all improv. Yeah. Yeah. And then I went into just the situation. And then I got off stage. I was like, yo, that was a dope set. But I was like, I didn't do what I planned on doing. You know what I'm saying?
But I think it takes the whole theme of this whole conversation, just confidence. It takes a certain level of confidence and experience to believe in yourself enough to be like, okay, yeah. I can go this direction and it can be funny.
And it can be funny.
I remember talking, shout out to David Arnold. I remember once I was in the...
I want to take his class. I heard his class is dope.
He's the truth, man. Yeah. David Arnold is the truth.
Yeah.
I remember one time he was in I think it was David Arnold, and he was in the hallway of the Comedy Union, shout out to Enz Mitchell, and I was like, asking, I was like, what you going to do tonight? And this is when I was early on in the game, and he was just like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I didn't understand it, because when I first got in, I was like, I got these five I'm finna do. But I realized after doing it for a while, sometimes it's like that. I don't necessarily always go to certain shows with a set. I just know I got these bags, and I kind of stay present enough to let the audience take me where, you know, I kind of did some of that tonight. So but I do understand that, too, where sometimes you say, okay, cool, I got this the set I'm going to do. But the audience, you know, fortunately, he was present enough to move with that audience, because otherwise, sometimes we can be so stuck. That's another way. We be so stuck in your set.
Your set, yeah.
And
yeah.
You'll bomb that way, because you be... I did that at the improv. I was locked in with my set, and yeah. I needed to do the reverse. I needed to just be present.
Be free.
Yeah. That's my, like, number one, like, Achilles. I don't know what it is. Like, if I'm having a good time, they're having a good time. And I know that, but it'd be like... I worked on this. I worked on it. Y'all finna get these jokes. And then I'd be sad because I could have just did. Yeah. I could have just did a little freestyle. We could have been having a good time.
Yeah.
Both of you guys have been on very big shows at networks. You know, you've got Hacks, you've got Ballers, as well as Kanan Power Book.
Yeah.
I just wanted to talk about casting. In that process, the behind the scenes, like, what was that like? And did you land the role that you thought you wanted? You know what I'm saying? Like, you went for that role. Was it what you expected it to be?
Well, let me just say this. I was 300 auditions in.
This on Hacks?
Just in general.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And I said, for 2022, I'm going to book something.
You put it on your vision board?
I put it on my vision board. Mm-hmm. And it was the first, out of all the shit I've done where I'm like on television or TV, whatever, I never had to audition. It was like, yo, we doing this, that. So yeah. I got a thing. But people don't know I audition all the time, and I wasn't booking anything. I'd have been put on the veils, but I could never book.
Yeah.
So Hacks was the first thing that my agent was like, yo, you got one.
Dope.
And amazing. I was like,
where you at? What agent?
I'm with A-List Management, A-List Talent, and Baron One Entertainment. So A-List is my management, Vanessa Henderson, what's up? And then Baron Entertainment is my agency, so they all work together. So when I got Hacks, it was dope. It was just like, finally. Because for me, it's just about opening that door, like, and finally getting in that door to, you know what I mean, or to get that validation or to get that confidence. Because when you audition a whole lot and you ain't booking nothing, you'd be
just,
like...
Yeah, it's discouraging.
You'd be like, God dang.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So for me, I was like, finally. You know what I mean? It was a few lines, but I was just like, yo, finally, like, I'm there. So now I'm more confident in my auditions, and I'm more confident because... I started getting private coaching for all my auditions. So I invest a lot in myself to make sure that I'm, you know, getting the proper look. So I have a lot of the same casting directors calling me in for different roles. And I'm like, you know what? It ain't about booking a role. It's about booking the right one.
Yep.
For me. So that's why, you know, I'm just like, I'm just going to keep getting. But Hacks was dope. You know what I mean? First time I had a for real trailer with my name on it. You know what I mean?
Dope,
and I was just, you know, it felt good, man. So I'm just looking forward to, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm just looking forward to be relocating like what London doing, man. Like, you know, like, and getting that recurring. My goal is to have a recurring series by the time my son graduate college. He got one more, he's going to his senior year. I want to be on that recurring series at his graduation, so his mama family, I could be like,
be like, motivation.
You just never know what drives.
You never know what drives a person.
I definitely thought it was gonna be for your son.
It's just so talk I could be like,
I did that.
Yeah, yeah, man.
As far as my audition process, I come from theater, so
Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'm coming from the acting side anyway, but so that's why actually the transition from theater to stand-up wasn't that difficult because they're both stage, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But my first TV project, really.
When did you start doing theater? Real quick.
I've been doing theater, I mean, as early as high school.
Wow.
I started working theater.
I was middle school in theater.
Wow.
Yeah, so, okay. You know, going back to that. But I would say my audition story would be one of ballers. At the time, I was working as a choreographer, and I was just, you know, dancing. I was
talents.
Just
yeah, you like dancing?
I didn't even know that. That's dope. I didn't know you was dancing.
You was like on tour, Chris Brown, like you was dancing?
I was paying bills, do some dancing. I was teaching and working on and different stuff like that. So, long story short, I got a call one day. All my stuff was at my mother's house at this time. Everything I own was in my mother's garage. And so I got a call coming from rehearsal, and shout out to Chris Spencer. He called me and said, "Yo, man, have you auditioned for Ballers?" I was like, "No." Nah. He said, "What are they looking for you?" I was like, "All right." And he said, "Can I send you a number?" I said, "Sure." They called me, and HBO called me. I went to go audition. I was really hoarse vocally because I had been teaching and not sleeping. Mm-hmm. So I remember during the audition process, I was like, "Yo, if y'all can't understand what I'm saying or hear me, let me come back tomorrow and let me rest this voice." He was like, "No, you're fine." And so anyway, I went into audition. I did that process was maybe like 2 months. It was just callback after callback. And then initially, the character Fat Reggie was only supposed to do maybe like an episode. Mm-hmm. And during the audition process, they decided to make him
expand his role, a series regular.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's why actually on that show, a lot of people don't know, I did a lot of improvising on that show because they didn't even have all my dialogue like that because I wasn't supposed to be there. Yeah. So they let me, you know, we was able to build the character of Fat Reggie and have him be important to the show,
yeah,
and able to arc him in an interesting way where the first season he was like really annoying, then we took him to a place where he was more responsible. So,
man, with that annoying thing, phase was driving me crazy.
But I had to do that.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I was like, he just keeps fucking
that's
up the
deal.
That's
how you know he doing a good job on the show.
But yeah, that was also
that was great.
The leading factor. Yeah. I had to make him interesting in a way that he was going to stick around. If I didn't create any value with him, then
it's a throwaway character.
He would have been throw. He would have just been the best friend.
Yeah.
So it was important for me to just play him really snarky and play. And also, it was all, first of all, it was all God, because I didn't even have an agent at the time.
Mm.
I didn't have an agent or manager.
Wow.
So that kind of came through. And then,
just for those watching, that's like an impossible needle in the haystack situation.
Yeah. The fact that you even got the audition.
Yeah, that's
crazy.
What I'm saying. Like, that doesn't happen if you don't have a manager or an agent to get that profile. It's impossible. So,
but that's how.
Look at God.
That's how I'm so humble and understand that I know it was God because nobody else's hands was involved.
Mm.
And so when you understand, it's a kind of cliche, but when you understand where your blessings come from, it allows you to keep a real grounded base of humility. Because it's like, yeah, we have to think of it like this. Like, first of all, our gifts are not for us. We have to look at these gifts like like rental cars.
Yeah.
Like, who flosses in a rental? It's not yours.
Yeah, so, man, that's so dope.
You know, when we understand that, then, you know, then God continues to do what he does. But
yes.
And then also, that was, so the fact that I have an agent was the first thing. When they made him a regular, that was another thing. The other part was all my scenes were across from Dwayne. If you can't be the hero, the next best thing is the villain.
Yeah.
So it worked out where even if people didn't want to see me, they had to because I was next to Dwayne.
Ooh.
So these are those things where I know God. Look, sometimes we'll ask God. Sometimes we'll say, you know, hey, God, I want a car. And we'll keep it right there on the surface. But when you're walking in your purpose, he'll add some things to the car that you didn't even know you wanted. Like, he'll give you leather seats fully loaded, the color you want with the rims. So that's how I felt God did with this. At the time, I had been teaching, and I was a teacher. I was working after school programs, boys and girls clubs, and all these different things with kids for a long time. I had sown a lot of seeds into just helping kids and teaching. And I felt like God was just like, okay, thank you for, since you've done that for me, I'm gonna go ahead and let you move in your purpose. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm glad that worked out. You know, for me, that's why I also try to help people with auditions, man, or give them whatever advice I know. But your confidence does grow once you land a project. You're like, oh, I can handle this.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for your journey about the fact that you felt the growth. Because you walk into the room differently, bro.
Yeah,
after you
man.
Book a project.
Yeah, and it's a fact. And the fact that I started treating my auditions like, okay, like, you know what? This ain't a big deal.
Yeah.
I'm just going to do what I do. And the fact that London even was saying, he went in there and was like, look, my voice is going. If y'all can't understand what I'm saying, I'll come back tomorrow. A lot of people ain't going to say that in the audition. They're just going to be like, I don't want to push no wrong buttons. And that's how I started being. And it's different now because everything is self-tape because of COVID. So you're not walking in the room. But I've just really started just learning how to just be me.
Bro.
Sometimes when you go into an audition and you act like you don't give a fuck, then the casting directors are looking like, wait, why doesn't he give a fuck?
It's all of that. And not to cut you off, it's so much of what y'all are saying. And it's also that thing where a lot of times people be like shaking, trying to read the thing. Yeah. But a lot of times when they be writing these parts, they don't have an idea of these characters. They're looking for us to bring these characters to life. That's why Fat Reggie was supposed to be fat. I'm not that. But it didn't matter. Once we got into the room, I made them see what they needed to see. So, but then also, you know, preparation is a big thing too. I realize when I'm not prepared for an audition, that's when I'm not really in my bag with the. But when I do the work.
Do the work.
Because also another thing is like a lot of people feel like just because you don't book a part doesn't mean you're not good. They just wanted to do something else.
Something different.
We got to not tear ourselves down like, dang, I'm going to.
Yeah, getting your
They head. Just want to go to. Ain't got nothing to do with you.
But it doesn't mean that you weren't seen by who you're supposed to be seen by also.
Right.
People forget that everything that you do, you need to do well because you never know whose eyes are
and
on
it's
you.
It's the same 100 casting directors.
Yeah.
Exactly,
yeah.
Bro. They talk. They see.
Yeah.
And I realize if the same casting directors keep bringing you in, you're doing something right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And because I was getting discouraged because, I put it out there. I auditioned for, like, Nickelodeon and Disney, like, 100 times. And they call me in for everything. And I'd be like, yo, why they not booking me? But then I look at it like, you know what? But they like me.
Yep.
And I'm like, it's going to be something. It ain't about booking. Like, and I go back, it ain't about booking a role is about booking the right one.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So whether it's with Disney, Nickelodeon, Stars, once I get booked for certain recurring, how I believe is going to be the right one for me, something that I could flourish and grow in. Because I don't want to book nothing that ain't nobody, that's going to be some bullshit, ain't nobody wise, and it ain't bringing me out the way that I feel like I need to.
Challenge you as an artist.
Right. So.
I'm sorry.
Oh, real quick. We just want to give a shout out to John Kuhn. He is a loyal watcher and viewer of Chocolate Sundays. John Kuhn, we appreciate you. He had a question actually for both of the comedians. And it's kind of a tough one because I feel like it's putting you on the spot, but I'm going to ask it and you answer it however best possible. So, what is the best joke you've told that got the most laughs?
You know, it's kind of interesting because.
Thank you, John.
It's interesting because, for example, a joke, you can get a good laugh off of a joke in the middle of your set. You know, like let's say I do a set tonight, and usually I talk about, the computer, I talk about the laptop, the Red Bull, and the water. Monday night, the laptop might be the star that evening, or Wednesday might be the Red Bull. So, because sometimes, like, I have this nice, strong Denzel bit I do, but sometimes I don't always get there. If I got a joke that hit harder, that's another knowing when to tap out. So the other night, I didn't even get to the Denzel bit. I did something else, and I did some crowd work. The audience went up, and I was like, all right, good night. So it can change. Not to be verbose about that, but it can change.
For me, I would say my funniest joke and my signature joke that I'm known for, you know what I mean, was my cool joke.
Oh,
yeah. where, you know,
cool,
it's just,
cool.
Yeah, yeah, cool,
I love that.
Cool.
I love that joke.
Where it's just like, you know, ladies, if a guy, if you ever hear a guy say cool more than four times in a row after
yes,
a price, that means he really can't afford what he about to do. So, yeah, you know, and funny. Then I get my example. I went to go buy a car. A dude told me the payment was going to be $800 a month. $800 a month? Cool. So that became, like, for me, like my, that was like my first major where people walk around and be like, yo.
That's the guy.
Cool.
Yeah.
Trey,
yeah.
Cool. Mm-hmm. So that was the joke, you know what I mean, for me that it everybody loved. And it's like my classic bit. And I don't even do it here at the Laugh Factory no more, very rare, because it's that classic bit. Yeah. So now, you know, but on the road.
Killing.
Cool. Still there. Because I call it back. Yeah. I do this. So that's mine. So that would be mine. Yeah. The cool.
I'm really in awe being at this table with all this talent and being with, like, people who are so multifaceted. Like, how do you feel, like, when it comes to balancing stand-up with all of your other, like, ventures?
For me, it's never leaving stand-up. Mm. So whatever it is, always, even when I'm shooting or whatnot, stand-up is the base, you know. So for me, and then I think with the acting thing, it just depends on the parts and the projects. Like, with this character I'm doing in Raising Kanan, he's not a comedic character. So
I've always thought that comedians that go to drama
make it, they kill it.
You know what, I think stand-up is about timing, too, mm-hmm. and being present and understanding people, mm-hmm. and we're always dealing with self a lot of times. So as an actor, that's one of those things you got to be. People think you go to acting, you take acting classes to learn how to act, but you actually take acting classes to do the opposite, to not act.
Right.
And to be.
That's dope.
You know what I mean? So I think that with stand-up, how it helps is that it allows us to be very present. So for me, I'm able to work it.
Yeah, for me, you know, it's just comedy is always going to be my number one bread and butter. So for me, you know, it's just like I don't like even with my writing style. Like I don't have to take 3 hours out of the day or 4 hours out of the day to say I need to write. My writing comes. I write, and you know, some people say this, but when I say that, I'm for real. Like I literally write on stage. That means I have my premise already in my head 75% of the time, but I will actually write it and create it performing it. That way, for me, it makes it more authentic. So when it comes to the balance, I'm not at home like, okay, I got to do 10 hours writing and then that. Nah, I write on stage. When I got my auditions, you know, I just say, you know, sometimes in a week, I could get 3 or 4 auditions in a week, and I'm just like, and it could get a little hectic at times where you're just like, all right, you know, but... You know,
and they send it to you is due at like 2 o'clock.
Yeah,
that's just pressure,
and,
man.
Yeah, and I have an acting coach that's very flexible, so I call her and be like, "I need you 2 in the morning. I need you 2 in the afternoon," and she's there.
Yeah,
so for me, it's just a matter of just saying, "Yo, this is my job." So you know, I have to. It's no option as far as not being able to balance it. It's just saying, "All right, look, I might have 3 auditions that I do in one day, and just be like, all right, let's knock this audition out." All right, done with that. Let's knock this audition out. Done with that. Now let's do this audition. Now I got a set. Okay, I do the set. Oh, shoot. Now I got to be at LAX to catch a 11:58 p.m. flight to get to the, you know what I mean? You just start realizing, yo, this is my job, and this is just what I got to do, and this is what I'm here for.
So you never block out time that you're not doing stand-up when you're on other projects?
Well, for me... I mean, of course, if you doing something, if you on set or doing something, it's just like, yo, I can't do this. If I'm on set, if I book something, like I'm on tour right now with Tone. So if something came up, commercial, or I got a book, something, I'm like, all right, I can't do this weekend. Mm-hmm. Or I'm going to miss this Thursday, but I'll do Friday, Saturday,
but
and Sunday.
But it's not like
a
month.
I mean, it can be.
Okay, I be missing stand-up. Like, if I'm too busy, I be like, man, like,
It can be, but that's only if you're busy doing, like, while I'm on when I'm touring, it's times when I'm on tour and I have auditions. So I remember I was in Jacksonville one
time. That's hard to do.
Yeah, I remember I was in Jacksonville and I had like 2 auditions. I had to go find a self-tape studio in Jacksonville to go
and do
record.
Said, yeah.
But it was so dope because in Jacksonville is a small city, so they was like, oh my god, we got somebody, a comedian from LA. She was like, I'm not gonna charge you. I'm just happy to be able to record your audition for you. And she took forever. I'm like, yo, it don't got to be like that. Just put
the camera up. Set up a tripod.
Like, yeah, man. Like, yeah, let's get it. I got, you know. So, yeah.
Speaking of audition, that's one of the hardest things to do when you're away is trying to. I remember I was touring at the time, and I had an audition, and I ain't had nobody. And I had to think about that. I was in Memphis, Tennessee, and I had to just use what was in the room, call my coach, and I just set up the ottoman with a chair, the coffee table, put a white sheet on the back of the door, and use one of my shoes, and I just had to balance it. It's a process to try to do these self-tapes. But first of all, to what he's saying, it's just dope that he got people who management that's interested and send them out. Because sometimes people don't even get sent out.
Yeah.
So, you know, whatever it is, I know his breakthrough is on the way. Because one thing about auditioning, what it does do is every time you have to audition, we have to break down those sides. Mm. For people who don't know, sides are like pieces of the script. So it's like many acting classes. Every time you get a script, you get into understanding what's going on. It's an exercise. It's a muscle. So I'm excited for your journey, bro.
Nah, I appreciate it, man. Yeah. And you know, to be honest, man, a lot of times you have friends in this industry that you may not talk to every day, you may not see every day, but when you see them, you already know it's all love, man. And London is one of them dudes that my boy Boogie B, when we first moved out here, we would have all these different comedy rooms. And London would be one of the ones we call, yo, London, do our room. And we would give a lot of comedians, like, yo, come do some time. Do 15 minutes, do 20 minutes, do your time.
That's a lot of time.
Yeah, and because, you know, we came from the East Coast, and so we was used to open mics was like real shows. So first thing we did was, when we moved out here, was have comedy nights for comedians to be able to do their thing. And London was one of the ones that would come and perform, you know what I mean, and work on his material and do his thing, man. And so seeing his growth, and a lot of people won't say it, but like when I started seeing that, I would watch London on Ballers and watch him on Raising Kane, and that was some of my homework, where I'd be like, okay, I like how he made that transition. I like how he, you know, did this. I like how he, you know what I mean, took a beat here, and that helps me out.
Yeah.
Because I remember one time, and I never, you know, he don't know this because I never told the story, but I was kind of telling him, like, me and Boogie, you know, that's my brother, so we talk all the time. I remember one time Boogie called me, was like, yo, I had did this improv class and London was there. I think it was at the J Spot. And Boogie was like, yo, that nigga London, he's a beast. He was like, London was like, and so, you know, I knew, like, you know, once he got hit, I was like, yo, because I was watching his shit on Fuse.
Yes, the first TV joint.
The first TV joint on Fuse, because whenever somebody that I know or rock with got something, even if I watch two episodes, I'm going to support them in whatever way. So I do a lot of homework just looking at people that I know. London is one of them, where I'll be like, oh, okay. You know what I mean? And I would use that, you know, for my audition.
I
love
that. I appreciate that, man. Absolutely.
I got a couple questions. These are not really comedy related, but we just want to know.
Nah, oh, good.
What's an item under $100 that you bought that's just one of those, like, life-changing items?
First of all, it's a great question.
Yeah.
I'll start. Gotham Steel pots. Gotham Steel pots.
Let me know. I need some pots.
Those are the non-stick pots.
Yeah.
So you can cook eggs. You can cook anything. No pan.
I got a seat. I've been looking steel. I've been looking for that, bro.
It's good shit.
This knee pillow that you sleep with in between your legs, it's changed how good I sleep.
That's dope.
I fall asleep faster. It's so nice. I can't sleep.
Okay, I need to make a note of all these products.
A knee pillow. Wow. Knee pillow. It makes you feel that good.
Incredible. If you're a side sleeper, I don't know how you sleep without.
I'm a side sleeper.
I sleep on the side now. I sleep on the
something
side.
How about the knees touching? Yeah.
It does something to your spine.
They say it does.
Yeah.
I got to try that. I'm excited about both these items.
Yeah. For me, I want to say this cigar lighter. I'm a cigar smoker.
Okay.
And I bought this torch. You know what I mean? It was like
is 30, it like a flamethrower?
It's a torch.
I know what you're talking about. The handheld is kind of
I just love it, man. Every time I bring it out, people be like, "Yo, that's a nice." You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I love my cigar torch. It was $100. Yeah, okay. I love that. Yeah.
Was it a gift or you went out and had to get it yourself?
It was a gift. But I know, you know, when people give me shit, I look to see how much it was. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
It was at 100, but like
okay.
That. You said life-changing. Under $100. Yeah. All right. Y'all might have to come back because I really want to find a good answer for this.
Okay.
I'm going to come back because I'm going to think about this.
Okay.
You got the next one?
I got more.
Yeah,
I got questions for days.
Oh, wait. You know what?
What's the... Oh, okay.
I would say... Yeah. I might say... I might say Clippers. Some Clippers.
Like hair Clippers?
Man.
Mm-hmm.
Like my first little... Like that... Just that, that trade.
I read somewhere... Or no, I think I watched somewhere. You cut your own hair.
I do cut.
You cut?
Yeah, yeah, I cut hair. I cut my own hair. But
yeah.
Clippers really... That... Like, I think that's just one of those things... It me being able to cut hair, I've saved money and it's just
freedom.
Been helpful.
It's freedom.
But I think about that. I think about my first pair that was like a pair of wall clippers for like $27 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But even though that pair has broken down, and I've upgraded from that. But the point is that I will say clippers have changed my life.
And I got to say my air fryer. I can't believe I forgot about the air fryer.
I ain't got one yet. I keep hearing about
it. Every time I see you live, you in the kitchen. How you don't have an air? I'm buying you an air fryer. My air fryer.
I keep hearing about them, dude. Everybody.
They're amazing.
I keep hearing about them.
I got one for Christmas. Changed the game.
Dog, my air fryer.
You can cook, like, you can go and get, like, say you get fish, right?
I keep hearing this.
Fried fish.
Wow.
And then you're like, oh, you know, I'm full. I'm going to just put this in the fridge. Next thing you know, you can throw your fried fish in the air fryer.
Yes.
And it's as good as when you got it.
French fries. You want to read
it. I'm the only one that's out the loop.
No, I'm getting you an air fryer. Every time I see Linda Brown live, he in his kitchen.
I'm telling you.
Do you eat leftovers?
Yeah.
Okay, some people don't. And if you eat leftovers, though, that changes the whole
thing. Yeah.
Well, that's what I need.
Yeah, facts.
Excellent. Okay, a couple more questions. What's the worst advice that you've gotten from a fellow comedian?
Okay, I got one.
That was quick.
Yeah, because
Who was it?
Hilarious.
You don't care about people's relationships at all.
You don't care about it. I got to see these people after this.
Hilarious.
This advice, someone told me, I know his intentions were good. He wanted to see me succeed, but I just couldn't go this route.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it's just like, yo, London, you really talented, man. You know what you need to do? Because they're not really seeing you. This is before all the TV stuff. He said, man, they're not really seeing you. You need to go ahead and just, like, start a fight or something. I said, what? Yeah, you just need to go and punch somebody. And, you know, because you're talented. You just need to put your hands on somebody. I was like, he wanted me to take, like, the 50 Cent approach. I'm like, I'm not, bro.
Yeah.
And thank goodness, I didn't, you know, that ain't my angle. Because, some, you know. But that was his advice. I said, I can't do that, man.
Yeah. I feel like I know who said that. That's great.
He was a veteran comedian who meant well. But I said, I can't be fighting people, man.
Did you wait when you got that advice? Were you in your head? Were you going down like the list of comedians? Like I could take him. I could take this person.
No. You know
did
what?
Did you get that far?
I couldn't get that far because I was still stuck on the fact that he said that. I was like,
yeah.
It's like, really? Yeah, man, you be good. I mean, just start a fight, start some confusion. I was like, man, I'm not finna do that, man.
That is terrible advice. You know. It's horrible. I'm glad you didn't take it.
Yes, man.
Yeah.
I've had some comedians tell me to write all my stuff out verbatim.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't be writing your stuff out verbatim. You know,
yeah,
that ain't my style.
Right. That's so. My first bomb was that. So I took like a comedy class, and the teacher of that class encourages all the students to write it out like a script, right? And so when you do that, the problem is you're memorizing words and not a story.
There you go.
And you lose the feeling.
And so what happened? I got on stage, and I said the first line that I remembered. Completely forgot the hook, that next thing, and I was just standing there like, shit, what is the next thing?
Yeah. It was hot up there. Yeah.
It was hot, and then once I remembered that next line, then of course everything else came together, but it was just like, never again.
Yeah.
Never again.
The worst advice I've ever gotten from a comic is, let me manage you.
Let me manage you.
I don't know why OG older male comics always want to
get
me.
That cookie. Let me manage you.
No. That's a whole podcast. Oh my God. A whole episode.
Let me get that cooking.
They are so serious. Like, I had an OG, like, follow me around a couple shows, and I was just like, look, I don't know how to tell him, and I had to have somebody else tell him, like...
Yeah.
I try to tell all female comedians, especially if they pretty, if you started doing comedy for 2 weeks and the OG, like, y'all, I'm going to take you on the road, he trying to fuck.
Yeah. You watch out. Yeah.
Be careful.
Yeah, you've been 2 weeks in the game. And you see some niggas.
Yeah.
But, like, they'll try to, like, introduce me to people, and I'm like, first of all, I know them. Like,
he going to have you in a bicycle shop with your shirt off, like Dudley on Different Strokes.
Damn.
Absolutely.
Okay. I think we're good.
We good?
Yeah. I think we're right.
I feel great.
I got more questions, but, you know, guys have been on it.
One question was great, man. That was a real...
Yeah, I love that question. Under $100. I love that. Yeah, awesome. Yeah.
Cool. Well, this has been an episode of The Sunday Scoop. We're right here.
Yeah.
Another episode of The Sunday Scoop. Thank you for joining us. Before we get out of here, can you just give everybody your socials just so we know where to follow you? I'm going to be right here to this
I'm
camera.
I'm at Real London Brown, on Snapchat, Instagram. And then my TikTok is going to be coming soon. So just, real quick, look for my, on Instagram, enjoy my white tea talks.
White
They're called London's White Tea Talks. And I just give 30 seconds of, you know, my perspective on things.
Okay.
Yeah.
White tea talk.
And you can follow me on IG, Instagram at comedian Trey Elliott, TreyElliott, on Facebook Trey Elliott, on TikTok comedian Trey Elliott. I do my my commentary on my memes, and real
hilarious.
Dope. Yeah, man. And you can catch me at the city near you on the Rock the Mic tour with Tony Rock. And any adaptable tour with Daphne Springs too. So you can catch me on some shows with her. Yeah, man. So follow me, man.
Great. Dope, man. And I forgot the most important question, real quick. It doesn't have to be a long answer, but just what does Chocolate Sundays mean to you?
You know, for me, it's always an interesting thing, because I mean, when I first did this room, I did my 3 minutes. And then they told me the next time we'll be booked would be like 10 years later. And it was the truth. It was. They came in the next day. I thought it would be funny. It's like, oh, you'd be back in June or such and such, way down the line.
Yeah.
So anyway, what makes this room dope is, one, the energy here is not like any other room.
Fact.
And there's a lot of good rooms, but just the energy. I got to give a shout out to Ron G. Mm-hmm. And
the curator of the energy.
Takara, I've seen her host a couple times.
Yeah.
They have a lot to do with that. Because, you know, sometimes that host can bring the energy down. But he's having fun, so I got to give him a shout out. Shout out to the staff here in line and everybody else. But it's just a fact that, you know, this room, if you don't feel like a star nowhere else,
you're going
to
feel like
one here. Feel the love. Make you feel special.
Yeah.
So shout out to the amazing people, man.
Yeah, for me, it means... history. It means, you know, it's when you hear, you're part of history.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And to be able to be on the stage several times, you know, I'm at the point, you know, through the grace of God, where I could call Lonnie and be like, yo, I need to go up this day. I need to do this. Like, you know, I don't take that for granted, because I understand that people got dates for 2 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's history for me. And I put my time in to where I'm like, okay, you know, like, this is a home.
Yeah.
And so it's comedy, it's black comedy history. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Chocolate Sundays, man. So,
great answer.
Yeah.
Shout out real quick, because he's mentioned black comedy history. Shout out to Paul Mooney. Peace be upon him.
The late.
There you go.
Late great Paul's. White people, you scared me.
Shout out to Paul. I want to think Paul about Paul Mooney. When he said it here. It's amazing.
That's great. No, and that's honestly one of the reasons why we started the podcast, was because you get to see everybody's act on stage, but it's like getting to know, you know, behind the scenes.
Who are
the comedians? What is their journey? That's what this whole thing is about. So hopefully, you know, a couple years from now, we look back and say, oh, this is some cool footage before y'all take off. Even more.
Yeah.
You know?
No doubt.
Great. Callie, where can we find you?
I am at Like Callie Scott on everything, LikeKalisCott. I got Rummy the Meat merch. If you want to see your girl as a cartoon yelling Rummy the Meat, you can get you a shirt. I've also got my silhouette on some shirts, so if you want to see me a little sexy, go ahead and go to CallieScott.com. And that's how you can get in connection with me.
Perfect. And you can just find me at RichMadeThatOne1 on IG. Thank you. And this was your Sunday Scoop. We'll see you next week.
Peace.
Peace.